Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
So we're stoked to be here. It is home opener.
Yes.
MLS is back in Kansas City, and we're here to spend a solid 2 hours previewing not only the match, but just going through what Sporting has done thus far in 2019. We've got some good things for you. We're going to check in with Matt Lawrence, color analyst, Sporting Kansas City TV. He's out at Children's Mercy Park. He's been there since about 10 a.m. And he's going to give us a rundown of what he expects to see today from both Sporting Kansas City and the Philadelphia Union. I'm excited to hear from him. He's always informative and entertaining. Big matchup, so we're pretty excited about it. And I don't know, guys. I'm just grateful to Spec for letting us sit down here for the next couple hours and talk about Sporting. Big game. So a lot of things coming up. We're pretty excited about it.
Yeah, this is a very, very important moment. This is a very, very important game for the for Sporting Kansas City. It's really early in the season. They played a lot of games. They played CONCACAF games. They played their first MLS Cup game this last Sunday against LAFC. Did not end the way that you wanted it to end. But now you're home. Now you have an opportunity to right the ship. You have an opportunity to get in front of your fans and show them why you were number one in the Western Conference at the end of the regular season. So this is really, really important for them. I know that the team is really, really they're stoked about this game. They're ready for it. And they kind of seem a little bit more recharged now that they've come back to Kansas City after having made the trip to LA and then went all the way down to Panama. So, yeah, this is a very, very important game for them just from a mental standpoint.
Right. So you mentioned it. They've been traveling. Now, they are traveling on a charter, which is a little bit nicer than, you know, your typical waiting on flights and whatnot. However, they've put in some miles already thus far. So as Chris alluded to, we did see some fatigue in a couple of the matches, and hopefully now getting back to KC, having a couple nights rest in their own bed, they'll be recharged. But Chris got to hang out with them at Media Day Friday.
Friday. It was really fun.
Yeah.
I'll tell you this. They treated me really special.
Oh, he got the VIP treatment.
I did. They treated me really. I was in the Shield Club, which, you know, if you've ever been inside the press conference room for Sporting, Shield Club's right there. Leads right out to the field. It is amazing. And, they treated us like royalty the entire time there. I was very pleasantly surprised because it was the first time I had done media any sort of team. And they had treated me that well. So, yeah, I appreciate that, guys.
I think that is the norm for Sporting. I think that they're known for setting the bar, whether it be innovative technology in the stadium or just the way they host their media days. I know that they strive to be a leader in the league, and I think that's obvious. I think that's proof of it. What was the general vibe? Were there a lot of media members? I know we'll get into more of what you learned at Media Day, but tell us a little bit about just overall vibes. Were people, you know, as stoked about MLS coming back to Kansas City as we are right now?
As far as, like, the media, I mean, the media was – Sporting Kansas City media is not like Royals or Chiefs media. They're pretty chill. They're pretty lax. You know, it's not like – you know, like, you obviously have worked with the Chiefs. I've gone to Chiefs games before. It can be a little stiff and starch at times. It can be, you know, especially like with the way that, because the Chiefs are like really, they're
buttoned up.
They're business. they're about the business. And so you go up there and it's, you know, people are kind of on their P's and Q's, and, you know, Royals games are a little bit different. The Royals are, they're a little bit lax, but still they are, you know, a Major League Baseball team. And so, you know, there's, still a certain stiff and starchiness. And here's the thing about it is, like, you know, when you go into like the cafeteria and the press box at Kauffman Stadium, and you see Steve Fizeauk and Denny Matthews and Ryan Lefever all sitting at a table eating, you know, there's a certain level of prestige that comes with that. But with the MLS hasn't quite reached that level of the prestige yet. And so they're still trying to kind of they're still trying to reach that point with the media where they're trying to, like, hey, we are one of the major leagues in sports here in America. So they kind of have to go out of the way to get people, like, they want people to be there. And so they're going to get you, they're going to give you a little bit more because they want people to be there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like for like the Royals and for the Chiefs, people are going to be there anyway.
They're all good. There are going to be too many people there.
Yeah, people are going to, yeah, exactly. You know, like the Royals are like, eh, let's not have so many people there on opening day. Because, you know, if you've ever been opening day press box at Kauffman, it's full. It's full. It's never full any other time except for the playoffs. It is full on opening day. There's no seats. People have to stand. People have to sit in the cafeteria behind the press seating because there's so many people there. But for Sporting, you know, they're still trying to get that mainstream coverage. And so they're going to give you more. And it's going to be a lot more of a lax environment. When we went there, they had just players out sitting at different tables at the Shield Club.
Hanging out.
You know, it was like, what? You know, like, you could have your own, like, private candlelight dinner with these people.
No security.
There's not, like, some buff security dude sitting there. It's not like, you didn't have, like, the communications guy standing over you as you're asking questions. Well, they were just chill.
Yeah.
It was different. You go to Kauffman and you go into the clubhouse, and the communications guys, like, waiting.
All over.
Okay. Yep. As soon as you get your questions, okay, well, no more questions, you know. Great. So that's... Yeah. That's how it is. Like, they'll give you a little bit more with Sporting.
Can I ask you this? So last year we went to ours. To the opening last year.
Mm-hmm.
And they had it at the training facility.
At Pinnacle, yeah.
Because it was brand new. Mm-hmm. And,
yeah.
Yeah, so they wanted to show it off to us.
Okay,
yeah.
So is that why they kind of did it in a different spot this year?
I think
this year
because they didn't show it, they didn't have anything to show off, any special new facility to show off. I think that's why they did it at Children's Mercy Park this time around.
Yeah, I think they brought it back. Because that's the norm. I think you have to do something at Pinnacle when it's brand new. And people are genuinely curious as to what the insides consisted of, et cetera. But,
and they wanted to stun on people. You know, like, look at our nice, beautiful training facility.
And everything they have in there, I don't even know if it was all done yet, but the barbershop, the video games, like all of the extracurriculars. I mean, all of that stuff is braggable. Like, you want to brag about it.
Yeah,
but
you want to stun on people.
Then all of the rehab elements as well. The sleeping pods, the everything they have. So
they
have
sleeping
pods
there?
Yeah.
What?
It's insane.
Like, how big are these sleeping pods?
I would imagine not that big because soccer players are not that big.
They weren't. I was down on the field. I was in that. When I was in the Shield Club, I was taller than most of those guys. I think I was probably just as tall or taller than most of the players on the team.
When I was there, so obviously 2017, so it's the majority of the roster is the same, I would say.
Yeah.
I was taller, as tall or taller than most, and I'm not.
Opara was the only guy, Opara and Shelton were the only two guys on the team that were taller than me last year.
Well, that's the beauty of the sport, right? You don't have to be the biggest, strongest, fastest person.
Messi's like 5'6", I think.
It's more based off athleticism.
Yeah.
So. And I think that there is a lot of mental aspects of soccer that you can trump the physical.
Yeah, it's not, it's a
elements.
Finesse sport.
Yeah.
It's not a physical sport. It's
getting
a finesse
back
sport.
To the kind of access, if you will, of Media Day with Sporting in regards to comparing it to Royals and Chiefs, I think that this has a lot to do with the fact that, as you mentioned, Chris, like, MLS knows they have to build the game. So I think that these guys are just way more. I think this is how I put it typically, that their pedestal is a bit lower than NFL athletes or even MLB or NBA. Yeah. But they embrace it. You know, they go with it. They're fun. They get to know you by name. Like, they goof around. And I also do love the fact that with Sporting Kansas City, I imagine this is the same across MLS, but there are also many different outlets from different language, TV and radio, and there's good coverage from all different kind of areas, I guess. I don't know that you see that as much.
The sport is cross-cultural.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
so much so.
But it's represented even in the media coverage, which I think is a plus. So,
Yeah, I do, and that was one of the things that you kind of get when you're watching the game, and you're like, there's a lot more diversity when you're like, especially, you know, and we'll get into this a little bit later, but like, you know, Peter Vermes spent 5 minutes during his press conference speaking Spanish. Woo! Because you had multiple Spanish outlets out there.
He would have gone for 10 if you let him. He would have.
Maybe he was. It was towards the end, so he might have like. Yeah, he was showing off. He just had to flex a little bit, but good for him, man. Me feel inferior when he was spent 5 minutes speaking in Spanish. I was like, I need to up my Japanese game because I don't think I could. I don't think I could spend 5 minutes speaking as in depth in Japanese, and I studied it in college. So,
think about how many of his players are multi.
He has numerous players, and so it's easier. It's easier for. And here's the thing: this is one of the things. It's like those players on that team that speak Spanish are learning English quick, and this is one of the things we've seen with the Royals too.
Yeah, they have no choice.
Yeah, this is one of the things like Royals too. Is like if I remember when Alcides Escobar, the first time I met him, he did not know very much English at all, and then you see him like a year and a half later. And his English was great. You know, when he was doing interviews, when the Royals were making a deep playoff run, eventually they won the World Series, and he was doing full on English interviews. You see him in like 2013, 2012.
Same with Salvi.
He was speaking. Well, Salvi's English was much better than Eskies, though. Eskies' English, he didn't know very much English except for a few phrases. And he picked it up really, really quickly. He was really good at it by the time the Royals had won the World Series. You know, Felipe Gutierrez, he speaks pretty good English.
Fontes does.
He was doing it pretty well.
Ilya, he went from his very first year here, his very first match, he was my post-game interview, and the poor guy thought that I asked him something completely different than I asked him.
I think I remember that.
And he even wrote an article about it later. I think he was like, Jillian asked me a question and I completely answered it very incorrectly. And he was like, I had no idea what she was saying and I answered it wrong. But you speak to him today.
Yeah.
And he's doing well.
Yeah.
He actually, so Ilya, Diego Rubio when he was here and Christian Lobato when he was here, they actually had a professor come out to the training facility and teach them English.
I think the Royals do that too.
Which I think is amazing.
The Royals do that too.
I think that's great, and I think it will benefit, benefit them immensely. So, we are coming up on our first break here, but wanted to let you know what we have in store for you. Obviously, we talked about Matt Lawrence, color analyst for SKC TV, joining us. We're also going to hear more about what Chris learned at Media Day. We're going to break down offense, defense. We'll hear from Zusi. I believe we'll hear from Namath. A little bit of PV and his bilingual intelligence there. We'll also just break down the game. We do have some really great updates for the World Cup bid that Kansas City has officially entered. We'll hear from, I believe, David Ficklin on that.
David Ficklin and Jake Reed did a joint press conference on Friday, so we'll play clips from that.
Very informative. I love the fact that their passion comes through. We've got a lot of work to do as a city and as the Midwest on that bid, so we'll tell you a little bit about how you can participate. And, of course, that will bump. We will bump right up to the kickoff of the match. So hang with us, and we will keep you informed on the upcoming match. All right. Welcome back into the first ever Sporting Kansas City special on 610 AM Radio. You have the Jillian, Carol, Uno, Cero crew. Not the Chris Powell crew, the Chris Uno Cero.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I'm working on that.
Working on it.
Just trying to give you credit, man. Just trying to help you out. Follow him.
I don't like using my real name on the air.
So previewing the game, we've talked a little bit about Chris had the opportunity to attend Media Day Friday. We've all been watching. You know, they've had a busy 2019 already.
Yeah, really busy.
Four matches in.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Three in CONCACAF, one in the MLS.
One standout match. I thought the first Toluca match obviously was excellent.
I thought both of them were really, really good. The second one was really good because you went to Mexico and you're playing in, I mean, that's high elevation. That's 8,000 feet above sea level.
Very different. And, you know, they just came out of preseason.
Yeah.
So they're not match fit yet.
And so, so you see that and you're like, you know, you're 8,000 feet above sea level. Oxygen. That stuff affects you when the oxygen levels are lower where they are, and you went into a hostile environment. The Mexican fans, they are known for being rabid. They are known for being very hostile towards opposing fans, especially when American teams go there. And so for them to go in and to set that precedent and to go out there and dominate. I mean, Toluca, after that first goal, looked like they were done. Mentally, they looked like they had quit.
I think they were stunned.
Yeah, they were stunned that they went out and got that first goal and made it look easy.
Obviously, Toluca was going through some things with themselves. I think 7 matches. And
yeah, they just fired their manager the week before.
Yeah, they went through some stuff. However, take that out of the equation. Sporting Kansas City still came out and had an impressive first match. So from there, they went to LAFC on the road. Decent match. Looked pretty tired toward the end.
Very tired. A lot of sloppy fouls. There was sloppy, especially in the second half. A lot of sloppy play there. Yeah. But I mean, you can certainly look at the fatigue and say it played a factor in it for sure. There was obviously some things that weren't fatigue. I think there might have been a little bit of overzealous reffing there. I mean, I see some things in Europe, and I'm like, there are plays in Europe that they don't call it a yellow card, and then he was calling anything. You breathe on a guy, you get a yellow card in that LAFC game. So there were certainly some questions there about the officiating, but overall I do think, fatigue played a part in it.
There
sure.
were, what, 6 yellow cards? 7?
7 in the first half, I think.
In the first half.
I think it was 7 in the first. And it was like 3 for LAFC, but 7.5. And some of the stuff surely was.
I thought so.
Felipe
I think
got a really bad one where it looked like it was a fatigue. Fatigue play. He just slid into him really sloppily. Didn't need to slide there because he wasn't going to get there anyways. And, so I certainly think fatigue had played a factor in it, but still there was a little bit of overzealous ref in there.
Well, we are prepping to hear from Matt Lawrence, obviously color analyst for Sporting Kansas City TV. He is out at Children's Mercy Park. I'm certain by now the parking lots are filling up. I'm sure that the Cauldron is stoked. I'm sure that they've been tailgating. I'm sure the drums are ready and warm and maybe even going already. We always know that the environment and the atmosphere at Children's Mercy is electric. It's unlike any other. You could say Arrowhead
I think Arrowhead's a little bit better.
Well, you could say Arrowhead is one thing. It's just a different...
The atmosphere in-game is different. It's
certainly.
Way different. They don't do that at Arrowhead. They don't do the constant
cheering.
Well, it's
a different sport. Yeah, it's a different sport.
Yeah, the culture of soccer is way, way different than it is for the NFL. And I'm pretty sure soccer fans over in Europe watch the NFL, it's probably different for them. It's pretty tough for them when they're going and watching and they are seeing this rabid fan base cheering so much when the opposing team is on the field, and then when their home team's on the field, they're quiet. It's probably something that's very, very different for them. But then you go over to Europe and they're just cheering the whole game. You watch soccer, they're cheering the whole game and they're just doing all these. There's these coordinated chants. They choreographed these chants.
Side to side, they answer, call and response.
Yeah.
I love it.
And it's one of the things, like, when I started, because, like, the thing that really got me back into soccer, because I watched it a lot when I was a kid, but the thing that really got me back into it when I was 16 was watching the 2006 World Cup. And just seeing Ronaldinho out there kill it for Brazil. Oh, love
He's
him.
Something else.
It's my guy. It was fun watching it because the atmosphere was the first thing you notice when you're watching these games, and especially at the international level. There's tons of passion there at the international level. People are patriotic. They're into it. People are as passionate about their country as anything. And so seeing that atmosphere there and seeing the people with their ugly face paint on and whatnot and wearing their crazy outfits and they've all got their jerseys, they've all got their scarves and whatnot, and just seeing that atmosphere played out on this international stage, all on national television, was something that really compelled me, because, you don't really see people go crazy for sports, for, that many sports here in the U.S. like that. Like, people don't go crazy like that for baseball unless their team wins the World Series.
It's just a different culture, right? We've talked about this so many times. In other countries, soccer or football is life for them. So we've seen people, make mistakes in matches and lose matches and then lose their lives. Or,
That's a little dark turn.
But it's serious. that's the extreme.
That is true. That's a dark turn, Jillian.
That's what I'm... Listen, it's reality. So in other countries, it's just taken much more seriously. So, it's your life. It's your lifestyle from the time you're probably able to walk. You have a ball at your foot. And whether you play or not, you're educated, knowledgeable, and immersed in the game. But something that I have noticed about Sporting Kansas City fans in the past, I would say, I mean, we know that they have a tradition of excellence. They're constantly competitive in every cup that they play in. Yeah. But Sporting fans are, they know the game. They know what's happening, you know, what strategy each team is bringing. They understand when to be loud and crazy and ridiculous and when to tone it back, which you don't really ever tone it back, I guess. But they're educated. They understand the game and strategy and how it comes and how they impact the game. So I think that's cool. And I also think that Sporting Kansas City as an organization has tried to encourage that, keeping their fans kind of aware.
A lot of that just kind of has to do with the fact that soccer doesn't have like a casual audience yet here in the U.S.
I think it's changing from casual to a little bit more knowledgeable and a little bit more.
See, I think it's always, I think like the soccer audience has always been knowledgeable, has been hardcore.
As far as
in the, like, if we're talking like international soccer, that's different.
Okay, international, I think they're educated. I think people here don't know anything about soccer.
Well, I'm talking about like people who are actually fans of soccer. Like regular fans who aren't really, really big fans of soccer, they don't know anything about
it. They don't know up from down, right from left.
And there's not a whole lot of casual soccer fans in the U.S. right now anyways, just because soccer really hasn't quite caught on for them. Right now, I feel like a majority of the soccer audience is like hardcore. They're the ones that follow it. They're the ones that follow it in Europe. They're the ones that know players. They know statistics. They, you know, when their team gets a new player, oh yeah, I saw that player, you know, play for, you know, what, some other team. I think that's where we're at right now. Like if you look at the NFL has a really large audience. Most of those fans don't know what the hell they're watching.
Right. They just like to see people hit each other.
People call in here and they spew BS and they don't know what they're talking about. And the reason why they do it is because they don't know what they're watching. They're casual fans. They don't have the time to invest to learn about the game. And so, yeah, it's something that I think soccer right now is still growing as far as its casual appeal. And that is going to eventually lead to more and more fans getting into it. But right now, the fans who watch are hardcore. And so that's how they know so much about it.
I think that there is a small percentage that actually does. They do know the game. They do follow EPL. But I think the majority of Kansas City fans are on the cusp of the casual to the serious.
I think they're more serious than casual.
And see, I think I'm going to favor the casual side because I think that there is a larger group of I don't know if it's just mom and dads that have little kids that now they're starting to play and they're like, oh crap, maybe I should learn this game that my kids are playing. I think that there's more of that group, but I think that we're all trending into that more serious side. So we're going to bring in now somebody who certainly knows the game, a history of, I think, over eight years in EPL. He's been over in the States. He covers Sporting Kansas City on Sporting Kansas City TV. He's the radio voice of NYCFC. You'll hear him today on the call. Matt Lawrence joins us. Matt, how are you?
Hey, guys. How are you doing? I'm doing really well, thank you, Jillian. I'm looking forward to this game that we've got in a couple of hours here at Children's Mercy Park.
Well, thanks for joining us. I know you're getting ready for the show to kick off and everything, but tell me right now, what are we going to expect to see today? What do you expect to see out of Sporting Kansas City and then obviously out of the opponent, Philly Union?
Well, hopefully what we're going to see is a team that's pretty well rested. We know that they've obviously had a trip to Mexico, followed by a trip to LA, followed by a trip all the way down to Panama. Peter Vermees has changed up the lineup from LAFC down to the side that played in Panama against Independiente. So there's a number of changes there. I think Peter will make a similar amount of changes, seven or eight changes today. And basically play his first team. I think Peter's desperate for a good showing in MLS after dropping 3 points, obviously, to LAFC last week. It's the home opener, obviously. Wants to make a good showing in front of the home fans, pick up the 3 points here, and then really go forward into the Champions League second leg here at Children's Mercy Park on Thursday. I think he's desperate to win both of those games. Get the 3 points here, so 3 points out of six in MLS play, and then obviously get a 1-0 or 2-0 win against Independiente here at home on Thursday, and then progress obviously into the semi-finals of the Champions League. It's a tough week coming up. Obviously the two home games that I've mentioned, and then a long trip to Denver to play next Sunday. So they've done an awful lot of travelling sporting, but they've got such a deep squad, Julian, that I think they can handle that. I know they lost narrowly against LAFC. I know they lost narrowly down in Panama. But they lost the first game of the season last year against NYCFC here at Children's Mercy Park and went on, obviously, to win Western Conference. So I don't think that LAFC result's too big a deal. And obviously the away goal in Panama was absolutely crucial in midweek in the Champions League. So I think they're in a good position right now, and I think they'll be looking to get back to that form that they showed in the two legs against Toluca here in Kansas City and obviously down in Toluca in Mexico.
Now, Matt, this team finished at the top of the Western Conference last year. Then they just short losing in the Western Conference Finals against the Portland Timbers. How do you think this team stacks up this year compared to what they were a year ago?
I think this team is better. It's a year more experienced. People like Busio and Jalen Lindsay and Daniel Shalvey, who are either in their teens or early 20s, have got that extra year of experience. People like Johnny Russell have got acclimatized. Felipe Gutierrez, they know the league more. They know their home surroundings here in Kansas City more. They've added Forton Burat at centre-half, who's a very good player to come in and replace Icapara. Christian Namath is obviously hitting very good form, 3 goals in 3 appearances already this season. I honestly think that this is a better squad than last season. I'm not saying that it's going to go one better and win MLS Cup, but they have the chance. And they also have such a strong squad now that they can fight on all three fronts, obviously the Champions League, the US Open Cup, and of course, the staple MLS regular season as well. I really do think Peter has secured a very strong squad. They've now got sort of probably, I would say, 18 to 20 players who you'd all be comfortable starting 10 to 20 games of the season. And I think that's more than most teams in MLS have in terms of really quality players. I think most MLS teams go to sort of 14 to 16 players of true quality. Sporting definitely go to at least 18, if not 20 this season.
Matt, talking about those new players stepping in, Busio, I'm interested to see or just to hear what you think that central midfield position will bring between Felipe Gutierrez, Busio, and Ilie. What do you think that we will see from them today specifically?
I think that if Busio starts the game, you will see somebody who maybe doesn't have as good an engine as Roger, doesn't have that steel, that bite in the middle of midfield, but what Gianluca Busio does have is real quality on the ball. If he plays, I would assume it'll be a toss-up between Busio and Kellen Rowe and possibly Johan Kwaze. If Busio were to play, I just think he's very good in the final third of the pitch. He's very mature in terms of footballing knowledge for a 16-year-old kid. He has great awareness, and he always has that picture in his head of when the ball's coming towards him, he knows where it needs to go next. He knows where all his teammates are. He already has, let's say, that picture painted in his head of where the next pass needs to go. Time will tell whether he does start today. I would imagine he will be in the squad. But I know that Peter has a lot of confidence in the young lad, so it wouldn't surprise me if he started at all.
Talking to Matt Lawrence, color commentator for Sporting Kansas City. Christian Namath, 3 games, 3 goals. There was a lot of talk about how he was going to do filling in that role as the striker. Do you feel like he is the answer for Sporting Kansas City at that position?
It's tough to tell whether he's the answer long term. Certainly he has been in the short term at the beginning of the season. Whether he is going to be the person to score 15 or 20 goals that you really want from that top class number 9, that remains to be seen. He's certainly proven, it seems so far, that he may be that guy. What he does bring to this Sporting side and what Peter really likes is the fact that he plays very well with his back to goal. He holds the ball up incredibly well and he's already showing great link-up play with Gerso and Johnny Russell this season. He's fitted into the team very easily. I think it helped him having a number of months with the team at the back end of last season, but not really playing a great deal. He's been working his way into the squad, into Peter's style of play as well. I know he's experienced playing under Peter before, but I think this is much more possession orientated, this version of Sporting compared to when Namath was here last time. But as I say, it's that pure possession style play, him having a real ability to play with his back to goal. He doesn't look that physical, but he is physical enough to hold the ball up and hold off centre halves. I think right now, if he continues this form, obviously, and specifically the goal-scoring form, he will be a real revelation for the Sporting side in 2019.
Matt, looking at the opponent, Philly Union, bringing in a couple of national team players on that roster. My thoughts originally, like, first off, go to Bedoya. Obviously, Blake in the goal. What do you think they're going to bring today?
I think they're a side equally as desperate as Sporting for a win. They lost at home last week 3-1 to Toronto, and what they showed last week was that defensively they're pretty naive. They've got two young boys playing at centre-half. They've got Wagner, a German left-back who's new to the league and young, being 22 years of age himself. So I think what they're going to show is a relatively porous nature at the back. I think there will be a lot of opportunities for Sporting to score, but they also are very dangerous on the counter-attack. They're going to play long ball a lot more than Sporting do, and they're going to, I would imagine, maybe not at the beginning of the game, but certainly as the game progresses, they will sit back, they will soak up pressure. And with two quick players in Fafapiko up front and Corey Burke, they will play on the counter. And at times, I think Matt Beasler and Borton Barat will find themselves two-on-two against those two centre-forwards of Philly. So it's important that Cessanovic and Graham Zusi at fullbacks, they can't both attack at the same time, otherwise they will get hit on the counter. If one fullback goes, the other one needs to tuck round off Phil Gillian so that Sporting don't get hit on that counter. But Philly, as I say, they're a decent side, but Sporting have to be looking for 3 points. They're a better team, undoubtedly. They have a better starting 11, and they definitely have a better squad. So it should be a good afternoon for Sporting.
I'm sure it will be. Matt Lawrence, thank you for the time today. Really quickly, it's an hour and a half out from kickoff. How is the environment? Are people pouring in yet?
Yeah, definitely. The doors have opened, the gates have opened here, and fans are pouring in. It's still quite cold out there, Gillian, but it's a blue skies here. It's absolutely beautiful. The floodlights are coming on as well. Not that they're overly needed, but almost just to warm up the environment. And I think it's going to be a red hot once this game gets started at 2:08 p.m. when the game kicks off.
Awesome. Well, we are looking forward to it. Thank you for the time and have a great call today.
No problem.
All right. When we return, more on the first ever Sporting Kansas City special.
Jillian's over here taking Instagram photos on the air.
Listen, I was just taking a photo to post to remind people to tune into our show. First ever Sporting Kansas City special, and I know that sounds like a menu item at a restaurant, but it's not. It is a radio show previewing the Sporting Kansas City home opener match, which is happening in an hour and a half-ish.
No, hour 20 minutes.
Yeah, kickoff's 2:08, so, yeah. You know, ish.
Ish.
Anyway, just heard from Matt Lawrence. A guy is just a wealth of knowledge.
Yes.
We're just talking about how he, being a center back, has probably the best view, aside from maybe Melia back in goal.
Yeah, goalie's got the best view because he sees everything that's going on. But, yeah, as far as, like, the actual position players out there, center back, you see everything.
Yeah, and you know that you are the last man back, so you need to make sure that you keep everybody in check in front of you.
You're the safety in football.
Always good to hear from him, especially just a few, maybe 20 minutes before he goes live. On the call, they do their pregame show, which you can catch if you want to tune in, of course, after our show, right? Well, I guess it's at the same time.
Yeah, tune in after. Don't tune in during.
Don't turn in during. Anyway, thanks again to Matt Lawrence. But we are going to move forward and start breaking down a little bit of what we expect to see from Sporting Kansas City today. We did have Chris go to Media Day. Overall, what in general, we'll hear from him eventually, but as far as what the head guy in charge, Peter Vermees, what are his vibes? Did you pick up from Media Day?
One thing I noticed, and we'll certainly hear this later, he's pretty confident in the youth that this team has. He was really confident in, especially we saw that when they played Independiente on last Wednesday. He was really confident in playing his young guys. He was confident in giving them time on the field. I mean, obviously, part of the reason why he put so many young guys out there, he had so many bench guys out there, is because his team was tired on Sunday. But
he didn't say that they were tired. He
didn't say that they were tired. He said that they weren't tired, but I could watch guys on the I could see with my own eyes they were tired.
Right.
They were breathing heavy, they were tired. They were making a lot of sloppy fouls cuz they were tired. But he was very confident in his young players and he looked at them and he were like, "Hey, you know, these guys can go out there and they played a competitive game." Now, you know, there were some runs that happened that where they gave up some goals and they probably shouldn't have because it was, and there were some runs where they didn't give up goals. We're like, man, they probably should have gave up a goal there, you know? And, and their forwards just didn't capitalize on that and didn't cash in. But overall, he's definitely confident in some of the guys on this roster. He's definitely confident that some of these guys can go out there and make something happen. I think that at this, the real toughest thing about this is the fact that CONCACAF starts so early in the year. Starts right before the regular season starts. And it's difficult because if you look at, like, how they do, like, the UEFA Champions League, mm-hmm. they do it to where there's a group stage and it takes place over months. They're knocking these games out in CONCACAF right now. I mean, they're taking them out right now before the season starts. And so it's way different because in UEFA, the team gets some months to kind of get into form and get their, you know, get back into where they were in the previous season. And they don't get that here. They got to be good from the very get-go. And so that's the reason why he was playing his guys early on, a lot of minutes. And you could definitely see it took its toll. But, you know, at the same time, he kind of has to because, I mean, in theory, CONCACAF Champions League is more important than winning the MLS Cup because we already know Continental Championship, much more important than your domestic league. So that was one of the things I kind of got from Peter is just he's definitely had to do some doing a juggling act as far as getting his guys ready and prioritizing CONCACAF, but at the same time making sure that his team is in its best form when they eventually move over and get into the MLS Cup play. So that's the reason why it certainly is. It's definitely been a task for him.
So we learned that Peter Vermes is confident, which he always is, right? However, I think a good takeaway, we always know he's going to be competitive in every possible opportunity. So every cup, so whether it be MLS Cup or Open Cup, and a lot of MLS teams don't take Open Cup very seriously. He does. And then the CCL games, you know, he's going to look at this as an opportunity to compete, which he does for everything. I think a huge takeaway from this is that we got to see Busio in this game. We got to expose him to that environment, that just level of just competition, really. Like, you're away from home. You know, you're playing in this high-level game. I think things like that are going to greatly just impact this Sporting Kansas City team in all competitions. So whether it be MLS Cup, CCL, or even Open Cup.
Yeah, he was pretty high on Busio too. He was asked about that during the press conference. And he was pretty high on Busio. I think he's high on a lot of the young guys on this team. And I think, you know, if you look at him, he's very much understanding that they've got to build up young players. This mm-hmm. is how teams are doing it over in Europe. And, you know, obviously they can go out and buy superstars, but a lot of these teams now are deciding, hey, you know, let's also see if we can try to have our own homegrown guys. And obviously we have that with Shallowy, but you got to do more than just one player on your team right. every few years. You know, it's got to be a steady stream of young players. And so he's realized the importance of that and he's really pushing that. And I really appreciate the fact that he's, you know, going, I mean, they just signed a 16-year-old kid.
Right,
Swope Park
right.
just signed a 16-year-old kid.
So that was last season.
Thompson. He's a goalkeeper. Like Blake Thompson, I think is his name or something like that. But he's goalkeeper, and he just got signed to Swope Park.
Mm-hmm.
And like that was something that was, you know, really good. 16-year-old kid. And
starting him young.
Yeah, and this is a kid that is going to be in your system. You can develop him.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's like 6'2", 6'3", already. He's already taller than me. So I'm a little intimidated by that. And, like, that's something that is really, really good to see because goalkeeper is really important. And so when you can get a guy like that in your system and you can develop him from the very get-go, we talked about this months ago about how the draft is starting to become less and less important.
Right.
This is proof of that.
Yep.
You know, this is prime proof that it's starting to become less important because you're starting to see teams focus more on their youth movement and, you know, having more homegrown players than before. Because, you know, before it was about let's go draft that kid from Colorado. Now it's like, let's see if we can catch him when he's still in high school and we can sign him to our team and have him play here.
And create those habits early and then get him the exposure.
Exactly.
All right. Game time is approaching. When we come back, we'll pull in some of the guys. We'll hear from Zusi. We'll hear from Namath coming up. Don't go anywhere. All right, welcome back into the Sporting Kansas City special on 610 AM Sports Radio. You're listening to the Jillian Carroll Unocero crew, head of Sporting Kansas City, hosting Philadelphia Union. Our dude, Chris Unocero, not Chris Powell.
Thank you. Well, you keep saying it, though.
I know.
See, this is what she did. This is what she did on Thursday, too, when she was making fun of you,
I
Julio.
I don't throw
because,
shade. I was not doing that.
Because Kansas didn't win the Big 12.
This all exactly I said was happened. You and I. That's all I said.
And then, you know, she kept chanting and she was talking about Ali Farouk Manesh.
And then didn't know her own fight song.
She didn't know her own fight song.
I did, so I couldn't hear it. It was a bad connection.
Yeah,
lay off.
Yeah, she just blamed the connection. Yeah, that's convenient.
Anyway, Chris Unocero was out at Media Day at Children's Mercy Park, who they put on, Sporting Kansas City put on a beautiful Media Day.
It was great.
Treated Unocero like a king.
Okay, I got the 2019 edition of the Sporting Kansas City scarf,
which he's wearing right now. He probably hasn't taken it off since Friday. Let's be honest.
No, I took it off.
No, I highly doubt it.
I had the bartender.
A nice member
night.
Of the team would have gotten some for us.
I mean, you would think so. You would think
I'm
so.
Just throw that out.
But no, he did not. He did not think of us.
I will fully admit it. I'm selfish.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
so
great.
I'm about this for me, and when I got the scarf, I was not thinking about you guys.
Julio, I'll make some calls. Don't worry.
I was. Yeah, you can make some. What do you mean? About it, you know them personally.
Come on, you can
get the hook. You got us the hook last year.
Come on,
but also those nachos looked amazing.
They were amazing. You should have seen how over. You should have seen how excited the chef was to show. Me and Kling were there, and we had just got done doing the Jake Reed and David Ficklin press conference, and we step out. And the head chef's there. He's dressed like a chef, you know, the white
with a hat.
Coat. He didn't have the hat.
That's disappointing.
No, it was fine because I can understand. You know, he's like, hey, I'm gonna take a break away from the kitchen to explain how these.
He was coming out to the people. Yeah, he was coming out to talk about it. Okay.
Yeah, he didn't need the poofy chef's hat.
It's all the more reason to wear that.
But if he was cooking, he would have need the poofy
yes,
chef's
sir.
Hat.
Yes, sir. Yes, please.
But
keep that on while you're.
But he doesn't
cooking
need
my
it.
Food.
He doesn't need it when he's out. He was bald anyway, so you know.
Okay, well, that's that.
But he had it.
That was unnecessary.
No, because, like, I thought she was worried about, like, hair getting in or whatever.
It was.
Yeah, I know. You don't have to worry about that. He's bald, so he was cool. But he was excited. He had this, I don't know if it's new or not, but he had this concoction of these nachos with beef brisket and baked beans on them.
Oh, goodness.
And I mean, I'm not one for exotic tastes. I'm a very picky and simple eater. So
yes,
I was
you are.
Like, yeah, and Julio knows this very well. And so I was like, okay, well.
But he was excited about it, and he talked into it.
Yeah, he was very enthusiastic. And so I was standing near, you know, me and Kling are standing near where the line was going to start. And so, like, I'm like, I guess I'm going to leave the line or whatever. And so I get in line first, and he, like, there, you know, there's this row of foods and whatnot there. And then he just kind of gives me this tutelage. He tutors me on how to fix these nachos. And we get the chips, and then we put the cheese on. I put more cheese than he was initially thinking I was going to because I'm a big cheese guy. And then we get to the beef brisket, and I'm thinking, man, I might have to put this on the side because I don't know if I want this on my nachos. And, you know, just his enthusiasm.
Quite the entertaining nacho story. Yeah.
His
apparently,
enthusiasm
dude, so Media
convinced
Day was way
me.
More than just interviews and
yeah, it was mostly nachos
insight.
For me.
It was nachos and talking to the chef. Now he has a recipe. He can emulate that and he can create it at home.
I'm not going to create it at home because the beef brisket sounded like it was very.
That's a little much for me.
He even gave us tips on how to fix corned beef hash. You marinate it in. I don't like it either. But you marinate it in 7-Up. You slow cook it in 7-Up, make it very
the things
very
you
tender.
Learn at SKC Media Day.
He was passing a lot of knowledge here.
I'm going to need you to start a blog on that, I think.
I'm not going to do that.
Write a book?
No.
Tell the people?
No.
Come on.
I'll tell you this. Sporting made me feel special there.
VIP.
They hooked me up with this 2019 edition of the scarf. You need to get it. at the team store. It is a very nice scarf.
He's not going to take this off all season.
You need to wash that thing already.
This is the first time I've worn it. I didn't wear it when I was there.
It's all lies. It's been on since Friday.
Yeah. No, it had. I had a bartend yesterday.
Oh, he wore it to bartend.
I did not wear it. There are witnesses. They did not see me wearing this scarf.
We'll check those sources later.
You can check your sources. I got sources. I got people that'll vouch for me. I was not wearing this last night. I wanted to, but I did. I was like, no, I got a job to do. I'm a professional.
He was under the shirt.
Issues.
No, I was very professional last night, so I did not wear this. That is true. I was very professional last night.
All right. Well, you learned a lot at Media Day. You learned about the nachos. You learned about how to marinate corned beef hash and 7-Up. But most importantly, you learned quite a bit about sport in Kansas City. You got a chance to catch up with Zusi. And he kind of just shared his insight with what was going on with the team and the defensive line as well.
At the end of the 2018 season, you lose in the second leg of the Western Conference Finals. What was this past off season like for you guys as a team?
Really not much different than every other off season. If you're not the last team standing at the end of the year, you're going to be disappointed. There's no question about it. Off-season is about kind of stepping away from the game for a little bit, getting the mind kind of cleared and ready for the next year, and then there's a preparation phase. So it was a short one-month off-season, and really that's all you need. I think after a month you start itching to get back into things, and lucky for us, we were able to start a little bit early because of Champions League and get together and really put ourselves in the best position possible to be successful this year.
It's always nice to kind of get back to soccer as quick as possible after having gone so far in the season.
Yeah, it's funny because you kind of force yourself to step away. If you're not the last one standing, you're kind of yearning for more. But you have to force yourself to kind of step away and get the refresh that you need for a new long season.
Now, it was kind of quick, you turning the season around, and now you're getting into the Champions League.
Sure.
And you're playing a lot of games in quick succession. Yeah. How was the team handling that mentally, being going from LA to Panama, now back to Kansas City in such a short time?
I think we kind of take it one game at a time. That's all you can do. The club and the staff are putting us in the best position to be successful every single game. Like I kind of pointed out earlier, we were able to start preseason at least a week early this year. And at this point of a season, we're definitely the fittest that we've ever been. And I think tiredness is really not an issue. Yeah, it's really as simple as that.
Now, is there a lot of pressure now going into the season, knowing that, hey, we went really far last year? Now we kind of feel like we need to go out there and get and win it all.
I mean, we, as a club, we set expectations and goals at the beginning of every single year, and with this club, we set them very high. So every single competition that we're a part of, every single game that we play, we have the goal to win. To win trophies. At the end of the day, that's what this business is all about, success driven. So no added pressure this year than really any other year. It's just what we expect at this club.
Graham Zusi telling us he had to force himself to step away, get some rest, prepare for the season. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about more of that and his question about, is there any pressure that you gave him, Chris? All right, stay tuned. We'll be back for more. All right, we just heard from Graham Zusi. Zusi's been around for a long time, very successful. Kind of a quiet leader, if you will, does his thing.
He's an Alex Gordon-like person. Very Alex Gordon-like.
Consistent.
Good comp.
I think he had a heck of a 2018 season. I'm sure he'll have a heck of a 2019. But I loved the fact that he said, if you're not the last team standing at the end, It's got to change. You're going to be disappointed. You've got to change. You've got to address the issues and come back ready to be that last team standing. So it was cool to hear. I mean, you hate that people are disappointed, but I appreciate that he was just very honest and said, hey, you know, we thought that we should have gone farther, and now we have to use the offseason to fix what we need to. And you asked him a good question is, do you feel like it's hard to step away from the game? Do you have to, like, force yourself to give yourself some mental break, and a physical break? And he said, yeah, because you're yearning for the game, like you want to get back to it. But always good to hear from him and his thoughts.
Yeah, and his beard game is amazing. It is. His beard is amazing. You see it up close and personal.
You're crazy.
I need to up my game. Beard game has been improving over the years, but it is not at his level.
I feel like you were obviously focusing on the wrong things while you were out there.
No, his beard. We were talking. I'm just like, this dude's
men's
beard.
Beards. Like, this dude's what is beard going on here?
This dude's sir? Beard is killing my beard. Like, my beard isn't bad.
Did you ask him for pointers, or no, you just kind
of... No, there was too many people around. There was too many, because it was like a line of people trying to talk to Zeus.
Is there a technique behind growing the beard?
Yeah,
Julio's
beard.
I was going to say...
Julio's blaming genetics because his beard game isn't very good. Mm-hmm. But as a person who is a little bit more seasoned on the beard game...
A little more seasoned on the beard game.
You have to... In order to get it this way, you have to grow it out, then you gotta shave it down so that it can grow back stronger. And you have to use products on mine to keep it nice and soft.
We're talking nachos, we're talking corned beef hash, now we're talking beards.
You're talking beards.
I don't know.
Zeusy's beard. Man, if we're putting together like a Mount Rushmore of sports beards, he's on it.
He doesn't have the
super long one, but his beard is nice.
All right. Well, noted. We'll look for that today. You also had a chance to hear from Christian Namath on the opposite side of the ball, the offensive side, and how he feels a little bit of pressure, but he's pretty confident about being the leader on the offense for Sporting Kansas City.
What's your confidence level this year, thinking that you could fill that role and be the goal scorer this team needs?
I don't think I have to take it like a pressure.
Mm-hmm.
I take it like more like to enjoy that situation. And mm-hmm. Of course, we have plenty more players who have that responsibility to score goals. I'm ready to play that position. I trained for that very hard for this preseason. I think we did a great preseason, like a team and individually as well. So I'm happy for that.
How are you fitting into the team after having been away for a few years? You come back last year, and now you're getting a big opportunity here. How are you really fitting into the squad now that you're back?
The team's a little bit changed. The players, the side. That time we play more direct football, and I play a little bit more on the side. And this year I'm gonna play more like number 9 position, of course. But this team is more like play positioning and then building from there. So it's a little bit the style different. That's why it takes time for me last season to adapt that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I said before, the preseason was great to. Just to feel the everything, the players, how I run and how I move. So everything was fine.
You know, early on, you've had really good success playing in that role, scoring goals. Do you feel like you've like really kind of moved into that role and done well really quickly, like faster than you expected to?
To be honest, I was how I started the preseason mentally was like just work hard and then adapt the style and. And I was lucky I don't have an injury that time and everything was fine. So that's why maybe that couple of first games was successful.
Last couple games you've had been a little rough, long trip. You know, you go to L.A. and you go down to Panama and now you're back here. How's the team feeling right now after having made such a long road trip?
Everything was mental, so we prepared for that. Just talk a lot about that, how it's gonna be, I think we have 25 good players, so the rotation was on. So now I think good to be back in Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
The home opener is coming, so everybody excited about it.
Yeah, you guys really juiced for that and feeling back mentally refreshed. Now you're finally back in Kansas City.
Yeah, that's happened, I think.
Yeah, so. big game on Sunday, Philadelphia Union, Children's Mercy Park. What can the fans expect from you guys on Sunday?
like always, we try to win games. We try to show our style of football, and that's the most important, to go out and be positive and win the games. That's what we're here for. Mm-hmm. And to make the fans happy.
All right. Well, thanks for your time, Christian. Thank you. All right. Good luck on the season.
Thank you.
All right, Christian Namath. Good to have him back. Obviously spent some time with Sporting Kansas City and then moved away and then came back. It's interesting that we have Zusi and Namath, being that when Namath came back to Children's Mercy Park, not in Sporting Blue, but in DC United uniform, he and Zusi had an incident which, after VAR, resulted in Namath being ejected from the game.
Yeah, Namath punched Zusi.
I thought you were going to ask about this.
See, what had happened was
he was too concerned with the nachos and the scarf.
Well, the nachos came after. I didn't want to stir the pot at the very beginning of media day, because I'm pretty sure they would not have liked me
Here's the thing.
If they'd have come here, if one of them would have came on here, I would have asked that question, because this is our domain. I was in their domain.
I hear you. Okay.
I was in their domain, and they had the home field advantage, and so I was intimidated by being on the road, and so I could not execute the way I wanted to.
And
if they had been here, if we'd have got Namath on here, I'd have asked him, why'd you punch Zusi, and did you guys fight in the locker room when you got there? I would have asked him that here. But yeah, it didn't feel like the right time to ask him.
We're just thinking happy thoughts. We're thinking this is one team. We're united.
Yeah.
Home opener.
The ambiance was nice there. I don't want to hear that nonsense.
They had
the lights very low. We were at these nice tables.
Was there background
comfy
music?
Chairs. Yeah, there was like some nice
elevator
background
music.
Yeah, it wasn't even quite there. It was just like some nice chill music.
So you're not going to be like, why'd you hit him?
Yeah, I'm not going to like upset the ambiance. Like, so why'd you
come on, man? You got to be that harsh journalist.
Did you guys have Fight Club in the locker room when you came back? It didn't feel like the right venue to do it.
They
understood what the situation was, and they clearly made sure that no one was going to ask about that.
They played you.
They did the mental tricks as far as this.
Here,
the
have
staging
some more nachos,
and positioning.
King.
The
Uno
nachos
Cero.
Happened after. It wasn't nachos. Nachos are not to blame.
Here, have a scarf
for me.
Chris.
The scarf came after. The scarf came with the nachos.
All right. Well, anyway, we heard some good things from Namath. He sounds pretty confident about being back. Chris, you asked a good question because he did spend time here, then away, and you asked how he was kind of getting acquainted again. No hitting, but falling in line.
Yeah, he seems like, you know, definitely, he said it was definitely a slow start last year. He said for sure it took some time for him to get acclimated back to playing in Vermees' system and with the personnel that they had there, because it was completely different from when he played here last.
Right.
So
right.
It was definitely something that it took some time for him to really get back into it. But yeah, you can definitely tell he's acquainted himself with his teammates and the system. And he seems pretty comfortable out there. Now, whether that'll translate into goals long term, as Matt Lawrence alluded to earlier when we had him on, don't know if it's going to be a long term solution, but at least right now, thus far, 3 games, 3 goals.
Right.
That's certainly something to say, hey, you know, thus far, pretty good.
Yeah. And I do imagine there's a lot of pressure on him today being back, you know, being in front of the home fans.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. Right now, everybody is going to be looking at Namath.
At least a goal.
Yeah.
I would say one or two.
If they get goals from elsewhere, I think they'll give him a pass. But if this team is sitting at 70 minutes in and they don't have a goal across the board, everybody's going to be looking Christian's way.
Right, and he's going to know it too. All right, when we come back, we have starting lineups for you for home opener Sporting Kansas City against Philly Union.
The first rule of Fight Club is you do not talk about Fight Club. The second rule of Fight Club is you do not talk about Fight Club.
All right, welcome back into the Sporting Kansas City special, first ever episode, edition. It's the Jillian Carroll Unocero gang here, and we have some starting lineup info for you for Sporting Kansas City. Now, Chris and I are just talking over the break. I don't have any surprises here. I don't know if you do, Chris. This is who I expected and who I was hoping to see, with one exception. I am a Shallowy fan, so yeah. I would have liked to have seen that start. However,
well, read the line.
Okay, yes, sorry. So in the back, Melia, obviously. Moving left to right in the back line, we have Sinovic, Beasler, Barath in for Fontes, who's still battling a hip injury. And then we got Zusi on the right. In the center, Ilya anchors the center midfielders. He's got Gutierrez on the left and Busio on the right for Roger Espinoza, who is out on red card suspension. And up top, moving from left to right, we have Jurso, Namath, and Johnny Rockets Russell. Pretty excited about the front line. I would like to see Shallowy. However, I would like to see 100% healthy Shallowy. And I do think he's still battling that little knock on his calf that he got in preseason.
Yeah. I kind of thought maybe Quaze would get that spot.
It's an option. No, he's an option for sure.
And I mean, I'll tell you this. It depends on how Busio plays. Maybe Quaze does come in for him at some point during the game.
That's a good point.
So that's, and, you know, especially because I think Peter is going to look at this and he's going to be like, yeah, this is a test for you. He's definitely looking at Busio. He's like, this is your test.
Oh, yeah.
But you got to do something with it.
And I expect to see a lot out of him, as Matt kind of alluded to mm-hmm. earlier.
Yeah.
And the kid is
PV
mature.
Talked about it, too, during his press conference. He's high on him.
Yeah. I mean, and they both have reason to trust in him, be confident in him. The kid's 16, which blows my mind, but he is very intelligent, very aware on the ball. He is creative, but he is disciplined, which is a good kind of combination to have, I believe, especially where he's playing there. And then I'm going to go ahead and trust Ilya behind him to keep him in line, keep him in check. But I am really excited to see Busio and Johnny Russell together there, obviously, or Jurso. I mean, name it, the whole front line. I think that he will be very creative, and I think that he will, I don't know, just kind of be a burst of energy in there. Not that Espinoza wasn't, don't get me wrong, but I just think Busio brings kind of a fresh mindset.
I don't look at Espinoza as a burst of energy at 32 years old.
But he still covers so much ground.
Yeah, it's
you
more
can't
of,
take anything away from that
it's
guy.
It's more of like he's like the hardened veteran.
Yeah, he's
been
like
there,
the bulldog.
He keeps fighting. He's not what he was physically a few years ago, but he's certainly a guy that he can go out there and he can get the job done. But Busio could very well be that burst of energy.
I believe he will be.
This is one of the things I think that they're kind of going to have to do over the next few years is start to try to trickle in some youth. Because you look at a lot of these guys, and you know, age is starting to get up there with some of these guys. Beasler's starting to get up there. Sinovic's starting to get up there. Even guys like Fontes, he's not a young guy. He's 29. Johnny Russell's like 28 now, so he's not a young guy either. There's certainly going to have to start trickling in some youth there. Obviously, you do have Shallowy, who's been with the team for a while, but he's 23.
Yeah.
So you've got some youth there. I'll tell you this, though. For them to play a kid at 16 years old, this is a huge moment, too, by the way. I mean, at 16 years old.
What were you doing? I was like just excited about my driver's license, I think.
At 16 years old, I was playing at my high school level, they were trying to make me the center mid. They were trying to. I did not like the running.
Definitely difficult feat.
They were trying to make me the center mid. I was like, I don't know about all this running. So the fact that you've got a kid playing at this level,
right?
Not a high school level, not a college level. He's playing at the highest level you can play at in America in soccer is huge. Mm-hmm. It is major. And it says a whole lot about his talent. And I think this is a good thing for American soccer as a whole, in that you're starting to see more and more young players get opportunities when they are really young. Not when they're 20, but when they're in their teens, mm-hmm. because that's how the game is everywhere else in the world. So this is a really big step, especially in a game as important as this one, not from a standing standpoint, but just from a message, emotional standpoint.
Yeah, making a statement.
Making a statement to the fans that, hey, we want to put the best product out there for you in our opening game of the year. This is huge. And if this pays off for Vermees, he's going to look like a genius.
I mean, I think it's going, first of all, he's proven himself in the past. He's played for the Pat. He's had first team minutes in 2017 and 2018.
Yeah.
So, but like you're mentioning, starting the home opener. Now, if Espinoza's not out on suspension, does he start this game? Probably not.
Nah, he doesn't.
Probably not. But the fact that he is trusted and you know, encouraged to do so. People are confident about this. I think people are excited about this. But he, you know, he's been in the system for a while. His family committed to this, that he has been in Kansas City in obviously the homegrown program for a few years now. So he's taken it seriously. He's done all the things he needs to do. And now I think it's starting to pay off. And so I think that he will inject a ton of energy, a ton of fresh, creative play up top. I think it's going to be great. And then I also just, again, Ilya behind him, Gutierrez next to him. Like, that center core is going to be fantastic.
Yeah, and then you got Zusi coming up on the on his wing there, which is going to be really important. Zusi's, you know, he's the leader of the team. He's the Alex Gordon of the team. And, you know, he's a guy that certainly is going to be very vocal. He's going to be pushing him. So I like that, you know, him being on that side, because you've got a guy like Zusi right behind him that's going to communicate with him. It's going to be like, okay, yeah, let's do this. Oh, hey, don't do that. You know, things like that. You've got experience there around him so that those guys are really going to help him out. So.
Also, Zusi makes those runs. Mm-hmm. Sinovic as well on the other side. He has had a heck of a year already, I think.
I don't like him taking those long shots.
I know you don't, but I love.
I talked to me and Julio like that too. Like, I don't want him taking them long shots.
I'm a big fan of how much Sinovic looks to be an offensive part of the team. I really think that so far he's done well on that. But getting back to Zusi, so Zusi, Busio, Russell on that right side, I mean, that's lethal. That's a
really good triangle of players around a young kid to help communicate with him and help him improve as the game is going along and make adjustments.
I'd put that lineup against anyone in the MLS.
Yeah, I mean, this is strong.
It's pretty solid.
This is strong. It's going to be tough to have Barath back there. I think he's just new. He's going to find his groove.
I'm not a fan of him.
What does he play to get one game?
He didn't look good against Independiente.
Did anybody?
It's true.
I mean, he looked especially bad. He looked especially bad. Now, maybe it was just travel. You go from L.A. to Panama, and it's just, you know, it's completely different. He didn't look the part to me. And maybe he'll do it this game. And, you know, there's probably mitigating conditions that could have affected his play. But I wasn't a fan on Wednesday.
Well,
it's going to take him a little bit to get his legs under him and get system and just fit in.
Yeah,
and you can't expect him to come in right off and just make that much of a difference.
Be an impact immediately, which
I mean, that's a position where there's not room for error. Like, it's different if we're talking about, like, you know, like Kyrie Shelton. He came in last year and it took him some time.
He's still trying.
It took some. It was like we knew it was going to take some time for him to come in and really, you know, find his impact. Find his role within the system there. But as a center back, like, you know what you have to do. It's pretty straightforward, and he wasn't doing that.
Well, I think Fontas came in and did that. I think that he came to the team last season, was popped into a game, and I think he did very well. He reminds me of Ilya, a guy who came to the team and was an immediate impact, and I think once Fontas gets healthy again, he'll get back in there. But as far as today goes, any concerns you might have, I mentioned mine might be Barath there. I would like to see Shallowy, but Gerso's had a strong showing. Julio, you just said you'd put this against anyone in MLS. What do you think, Chris? I think this is an overall strong lineup today.
I'd say it's a pretty good lineup. Like I said, we'll definitely see about Busio. I'm like, especially with young players,
He doesn't play young.
That doesn't mean he's not young, though.
This is true.
And he's surrounded by a bunch of experience.
And he's surrounded by a bunch of experience, but, you know, that don't mean anything. If he makes a couple bad plays or somebody makes a good run past him, and he's got – and, yo, that's an environment. That's a crowd. I mean, that's a huge crowd. This is a big environment. It's going to be very electric at CMP. I mean, he's young. He's 16 years old. I don't know if I could have handled that spotlight.
He is, but he's also been in the system for a long time.
And he's been in this environment before. Played at Children's World.
There's a different feel on this kind of day with this kind of pressure out there. He's played, but this is his first start, right?
First home opener start.
Yeah, for sure. This is a lot of pressure on him. And so I'm going to wait and see about that. I'd say, you know what, I'm not a fan of is Gerso. And I understand the situation with Gerso.
I think he's done well this year. I think so. I think last year I was a little disappointed, but I definitely have seen, what are we, four matches in?
I wasn't a fan of him last Sunday.
Last Sunday, nobody played well, in my opinion.
Yeah, he...
Nobody played their best version of themselves.
And I wasn't a fan of him against Toluca either.
I think he's a much better He plays a much better role coming off the bench.
Yeah, he's a better energy guy.
I don't think, off the bench.
Starting short, less minutes.
Yeah, like you
his
put
engine
him in,
is not quite
you
there.
Put him in at like 60 minutes in for him or Rockets, for Shallowy or Rockets, whichever one kind of seems like they're tiring first. And he provides you, like, I thought he did a great job against Portland at CMP in the Western Conference final second leg. Came in there, got that goal, could have had another one. He was the energy guy. He was carrying that team in that second half.
That's the most effective role for him.
Yeah, to me, that's the best role. Because you remember 2 years ago, he was starting on the right wing.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like he'd get there, he'd take the ball, get into the 18, and he didn't know what to do with it. And, you know, it just like, I watch him play, and it's like, I don't know.
But you got to remember that also in this system, Peter Vermes is asking him to play outside of his comfort zone. He was not a winger.
No.
So that's very different for him. And I think, as a whole, I think he does his best. I think we're all in agreement here when he comes off the bench and can just go 100 miles an hour for as long as he can.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Because he tires out quickly. We've seen that. We started games. You remember me and Julio were at the U.S. Open Cup final against New York Red Bulls. And like 60 minutes in, he was looking over at PV trying to get subbed. He was gassed.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
Anybody touched him, he'd fall over like he got shanked and he just fell and he was done.
Yeah.
So I think he's at his best when he can just come off the bench and just play at 100 miles an hour. I don't really like him starting. So we'll see how it happens. I would think he probably gets subbed at some point. But, yeah, I've been a skeptic of his since last year.
Overall, though, I think we're general consensus. We feel confident in the lineup.
It's a good lineup.
And the fact that it is home opener, Sporting is known for bringing it. The fans and the team on the pitch. So when we come back, we'll look at Philly Union, a little bit of their lineup led by Mexican DP Marco Fabian, only goal scorer for the Union on the year. We'll break that down when we come back. Welcome back in. It's Jillian Carroll, Uno Cero gang here, bringing to you the first ever Sporting Kansas City special. We got a 2-hour show breaking down Sporting Kansas City, the 2019 season, starting with some CCL, and MLS is now back. They have home opener match today starting in about 37 minutes. They welcome the Philly Union.
Look at the math on that.
You know,
I used to be very specific.
I used to be a math teacher. I used to be a third grade teacher.
I stopped learning math after my freshman year of high school.
Sounds about right.
Anyway, first of all, a quick thank you to from the 816. Good luck with your show so far. You guys are doing great. We appreciate you.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening.
Keep
it up. Tell your friends. We told you we would bring you the starting lineup for. We talked through Sporting Kansas City, but for the Philly Union, so Andre Blake in goal is going to be a challenge for Sporting Kansas City. He is just a big body, and he does well. He covers a lot of ground. He's going to be a challenge. Across the back line, we have Wagner, Trusty, Elliott, Gaddis, Madunyanin, and the center midfield. These guys are killing me here. Bedoya's on the right.
We had to look it up on YouTube how to pronounce Madunyanin.
Madunyanin, I thought.
We got it. It was YouTube. It wasn't really us.
We should have asked Matt. The rest of these are going to get me too. I know.
I would have loved to hear him pronounce Madunyanin's name.
He might have said it. We might not have caught it. But Marco Fabian is, you know, their attacking mid.
He's more like a false nine-ish.
He's the only one to score for them on the year. Obviously, it's still early in the year. Bedoya on his right, and this guy's, I'm going to botch this, but Cervalli on the left.
Is it Cervalli? I thought it was Crayoval.
Okay, well, could it go with either
one of those?
It looks
like Crayoval. It looks like Crayoval.
And then up top, Picalt and Burke. And if you remember hearing from Matt Lawrence this earlier in the show today, he said the two guys up top are pretty speedy. They're going to look for counter opportunities, and they're going to try to take those. But their weakness is in the back line. So, obviously, Sporting Kansas City will combat that with Gerso, Namath, Russell, Shallowy, the list goes on. But as I mentioned, I think, well, through the middle, Bedoya is an experienced player. You know, obviously, U.S. national team brings a lot of expertise and pace on the ball. But I think the biggest challenge, honestly, that the Union brings is probably going to be getting past Andre Blake.
I think for this team, Sporting can really put a lot of pressure on them because you look at their formation and
it's a mess.
It's like they cut the team in half. They've got
five
guys.
Yeah.
on the offensive side, and then they got five guys back playing defense. And that tells me that when you have a center defensive mid committed so far back to where he is essentially almost a center back, and a third center back there, that tells me that you're not very confident at your back line is going to be able to keep teams from not only possessing the ball in your half of the field, but also being able to then take advantage of that and see if you can run the counterattack. I'm not sure. I mean, obviously, we know that Sporting's weakness over the years has been defending the counterattack.
Right.
It's been one of the things that's really killed them. But considering how many players they have committed to their back line, it's going to take away from their ability to counterattack.
Well, there's going to be this huge gap.
Yeah, there's a huge gap in between. And that to me is like the thing that concerns me about it. It would concern me if I were a Philly fan, is how are you going to be able to generate offense when you have so many men committed to your back line, committed to your defensive side? And it wouldn't surprise me if they also tried to pack it in. Whenever
especially at Children's Mercy Park.
Oh, yeah, especially in front of that environment, knowing that Sporting is juiced, Sporting is going to go out and try and push the ball down the field, try to score. Mm-hmm. Was one of the things Vermes talked about, was trying to provide an entertaining style of soccer for fans to watch.
I love that he cares about that.
Yeah.
I love it.
All these guys do. I mean, all these leagues now understand just how important it is to provide a product that people actually want to watch, right. Especially because you got baseball. That, I mean, Major League Baseball is so afraid of people losing interest in their sport that they're doing whatever they can to try to make sure that the games are still entertaining for fans. And so absolutely, stylistically, these teams are very much focused on trying to create a style of soccer that fans will actually want to see, because that's how you're going to grow the game. So, yeah, I'm definitely, when I look at this lineup for Philadelphia, I see. I would imagine that Philadelphia is probably going to hope and pray that they can possess the ball and they can just hold on to it and hold on to it. And then they can hope, beyond hope, that Sporting makes a mistake as far as positioning goes. Maybe they try to attack Busio and see if they can get him, force a mistake out of him. Maybe they see if they can catch Zusi off guard, because we know Zusi sometimes he'll sell out on offense and then he won't get back on defense. And so we see that happen. We saw that against New York City, NYCFC last year, where they were attacking from Zusi's side because he wasn't getting back on defense. This is one of the things that they could try to do to take advantage of that. But, you know, the way this formation is set up, it's very defensive minded, and it kind of leads questions about their counterattack.
Well, I think Jillian's point, as far as, like, it's the home opener. Just by looking at this lineup, you can tell their plan is to pack it in and hope they get a 1-1.
Yes.
You know, they get a point out of it.
Or maybe they can
They're not looking to – look, Sporting strength of possessing the ball is what they're weakest at. So packing it in and just hoping for a draw and getting a point, they'll consider that a victory all day.
Well, a huge victory. Yeah.
Or they can just see if they can, you know, hold on to it and then sneak a goal and see if they can steal a 1-0 victory.
I mean, certainly you hope that they are going to bring a game. You don't want anybody to come in and just park the bus and just wait for the time to pass.
Some teams try to do it.
However,
some teams try to do it.
However, this could be one of those matches. They are coming off a 3-1 loss to Toronto. This is their first road match. I'm hoping they bring some energy. I'm hoping they bring a game plan that does not consist of parking the bus. However, looking at the lineup, like
don't
we just
look
mentioned.
Like it.
I know. It looks like that. So what I see this, first of all, is the center of the field is just so exposed. And Sporting Kansas City lives in the center of the field. So Ilya is going to have his hands full with Fabian, because he's old. He's not a fiery nine that's going to be moving all over the place. He's going to sit in and expect. Yeah, he's going to be looking for those cheeky passes.
Did you go on thesaurus.com and look up?
Off the top of the head.
Crafty.
Off the top of the dome, sir.
No, but he's going to kind of stand, you know, hang out, and he's going to hold his space. And so Ilya is going to have some responsibility there. However, I believe that this game, Gutierrez and Busio are going to have a lot of free reign in the center of the field there, and I believe they're going to be able to create quite a bit for Gerso, Russell, Shallowy, whoever we see on the wing. The two guys up top are speedy, and let's be honest, Zusi probably had one of the worst matches we've seen him play this last CCL game. So that is, you know, I guess an area of concern for me. Do I think he's going to sort out whatever happened when he let in. You know, he was at fault for two goals last match, and that's not that's out of character for him. So I think he'll get it together, and I think he'll bring a regular performance. But those two speedy wingers are going to be a handful for Šinović and Zusi.
I think the interesting thing for Vermees, I think one of the ways he can really take advantage of this is they decide to park the bus is he's got a high press early on. Mm-hmm. He's got to go in there and he's got to like make sure that front line is pressing those guys on that back line because, you know, just from this lineup, it doesn't look like they're very confident on their defense. So if they make a mistake possessing the ball and Sporting's able to get the ball and get it with advantage, we could see a pretty quick goal out there. This is one of the things that, you know, that you see a lot of teams over in Europe do. Whenever you've got a team that likes, because Barcelona loves to possess the ball. They love to sit around and kick the ball, short passes. I mean, even
but just keep it.
Yeah, they just, they just sit there.
Yeah, yeah. They play that Barcelona style.
Yeah, yeah. They do play the Barcelona style, but I mean, a little more attack minded. But and this is one of the reasons why teams have been doing this with Sporting this year is they've been running high press on them, and it worked against LA. They were forcing fouls, and LA was getting opportunities. And same thing with Independiente too. They were running high press, and they were able to get tons of chances. You know. So if you get a team that's you know trying to possess it off their back line, especially with their center backs, which I really hate, you know it gives you an opportunity. If you high press, you can force turnovers and you can get opportunities, really clean opportunities at goals. And so I think early on, if they decide to do that, they decide to park that bus over there in their half of the field. This gives you an opportunity to high press and see if you can get an early goal. Mm-hmm. And then once you do that, you change their strategy completely.
Right.
You get up 1-0 in the first 20 minutes.
Yeah. Yep.
The game changes completely. And at that point, Philadelphia's got to open up, and that would play more to your strengths after that.
Well, yeah. going back to the Busio topic, you know, obviously Peter knows what he's doing and the fact that this is probably the perfect game, aside from it being an opener, because of Philadelphia's style of play, to get him in there because there's not as much pressure because that's not a strength of theirs as far as the midfield goes. So Busio will have the ability to kind of take his time with it and kind of get a feel for it and not feel so much pressure just because he's going to have that, again, the surrounding talent around him and have the time to kind of not feel the pressure.
In all likelihood, they're not going to be very aggressive.
No, exactly.
Just because of the formation.
I mean, we say this, and nobody comes into the game not being, you know, not bringing their A game, so to speak. It's not
I've seen the U.S. men's national team not bring their A game all the time.
Well, that's a whole other topic. But in MLS home openers or MLS, you know, beginning of the season, or any MLS match, you're not going to, you know, sometimes we do see that managers have decided to change up the lineup, make a bunch of changes. Philly didn't make changes. Like, this is their number one lineup. So they're bringing their first team. You know, they're starting with that. However, I think that they're intelligent enough to understand the circumstances and understand where they are. A couple of things that I do think that could be challenging is I do think, and I know we haven't really talked about it, but I do think the back line is going to miss the pure athleticism of Aiko Parra.
And the leadership.
And leadership. As much as I respect Ike, I don't think he was the most, like, technically 1v1 defender. I don't think he was the strongest.
No.
However, his athleticism rarely resulted in him getting beat. You know, it caused him to win most tackles, aerial and ground. So I do think with two speedy up top, you know, Philly Union four wingers, I do think that they could pose a threat if Zusi and Šinović are caught out of position. Previously, Sporting relied on Aiko Parra. So his athleticism kept him back there. He was recovering. Now, Beisler, I think, had one of his best seasons in 2018. And so I hope to continue to see that from him, but I do think that these two speedy up top, guys from the Union could pose a threat because Sporting is lacking the athleticism of Opara.
Yeah. And that's the reason why it's going to be important that Zusi and Barath are on game. They're on their game because otherwise there can be some issues there.
Right.
Teams taking advantage of that. Like one of the things that we see is that, especially when we in the second leg of that Western Conference final, teams were, you know, players, you saw the striker slip in between Opara and Beisler and be able to get goals. And,
right.
You know, or guys on the back line not pressing. And that's one of the problems is when you're not pressing, when guys are starting to get into the 18 or right around the 18 and they get some space to take a shot. Well, then you see what happened with Diamante last week where he got some space, because they were down a man, and he was able to get a nice shot off, and he was able to get a goal. Same thing happened with, I think it was the first goal that that Portland scored in that at Children's Mercy Park last year.
Yep. Ilya was easily 10 yards away from him, and the dude just lined up and smashed.
Nobody there. And Melia was not expecting to have to defend a shot from that far out.
Right.
And, you know, when that shot was let loose, he couldn't defend it. And so that's the reason why it's so important to be able to press. And so it's going to be important that Zusi and Barath are there to, they're communicating and they understand, okay, this guy's my responsibility. I've got to pressure him.
All right. That was the Union starting lineup. You've heard now Sporting Kansas City's starting lineup, Union star lineup. We are approaching game time. We've got one more segment. We're going to talk quickly about the World Cup bid that Kansas City has submitted, and then we will get to game time. Hang with us. And we are back 11 minutes from kickoff. We are going to pause quickly because we have some updates for you on the bid that Kansas City entered for the World Cup 2026 for the matches to be in Kansas City. So, again, Chris Unocero out at Sporting Kansas City's Media Day on Friday. He had a chance to hear from both Jake Reed, president of Sporting Kansas City, and David Ficklin, chairman of this bid. I'm going to botch his title, but he is the chairman. He is leading the force behind this
bid. I think he said
bid.
His title was way too long anyways.
He would never give himself enough credit, but this man does so much behind the scene work. He's worked on Olympics in the past. He's worked on so many things, and now he is leading the charge as far as the bid for Kansas City. So let's hear what they have to say.
It's been a ton behind the scenes, and David can probably speak a little more in the weeds on the details, but as you can imagine, and as it's been very public, we've got some renovations that would have to be done at Arrowhead, which we've been working through with the Chiefs, and they've been great on that front. We've got great support from both sides of the state line, and you know, kind of KCK, KC Moe, the Sports Commission, and Kathy Nelson and her group have been incredibly helpful in kind of rallying everything. So I think we're to a point now where we're, you know, we've got kind of the committee established to really, you know, fundraising is going to be a big piece of this moving forward as we try to establish, you know, we've got to do a bunch to get ready for this thing, but it's been busy. So Dave, you may be able to do a little more in the weeds on where we are. But.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. You know, tactically, we're trying to show that even though there are some questions about our bid and transportation and the Arrowhead field size, we're advancing the planning for that to the point where we'd be 3 years out from the World Cup. It's what I've been used to doing, and so it's natural, as we are the thought leaders in soccer here in the Kansas City metropolitan area, to take that planning, because we know what needs to be done, and advance it so that when the evaluation takes place, FIFA and U.S. Soccer say, you know, these guys have got it all. They're 2 years beyond us in planning. So, you know, we have a strategy there to really advance our planning. And then, you know, Jake was talking about the support we have. In the first stage of the bid, we told the story of two cities and two states coming together, united to support Kansas City's bid. And in the past couple months, we've been reaching out to really the 10, 11 states that are surrounding us. And these are states where the kids come to Kansas City on a weekly basis to play in tournaments anyways. And so the travel to Kansas City is part of their soccer life. And we started to tell them about how we're using the excitement of the World Cup bid to continue to grow soccer, and these states want to be a part of it. And so we've really changed the focus of the bid in this final stage from bring the World Cup to Kansas City to bring the World Cup to the Midwest, because there are 50 million Americans within a one-day drive, and you know that's almost 500,000 youth soccer players, and it's an easily that number or more kids who don't play the sport that we have a chance to inspire and introduce the game to. So those are two things we're working on right now.
That is an update. Big things happening in soccer in Kansas City. And as David Ficklin and Jake Reed just informed us, not just Kansas City, but the Midwest. I could go on and on about this and how excited I am, but Chris and I are going to break this down a little further on our show Thursday. So Jillian Carroll, Uno Cero, tune in 8 p.m. Big things happening, a lot of people working toward this goal, and we will share with you how you can also be a part of that. But Chris, the game is approaching. Yep. Home opener, Sporting Kansas City hosting Philadelphia Union. Oh, look at your math.
Yeah. I'm better at the small math.
I gave him a heads up, so he was counting. I saw it. He was like, his fingers.
Well, I just looked at the thing, and I was like, 15 minutes. That's easy.
No, it's definitely going to be a big match. It is a big match. I think it's going to be good soccer. I know Peter Vermes' plan is going to be that possession, but fast and furious, so right away. I mean, I'm expecting a goal in the first 20 minutes. I'm just going to put it out there. I don't know who it's going to be first.
Maybe Russell. No, don't say maybe. Make it definitive.
Okay.
This is how we do predictions. You have to be definitive with your
prediction. I'm going with Russell first 20 minutes just because I feel like I love the way he plays. Busio is probably going to be involved in some way, shape, or form, but I'm going with Russell.
I agree with you. I think they're going to score early. I don't think they're going to play the possession game early on. I think they're going to try to score as quick as possible.
Mm-hmm.
They want to get the crowd really into it, mm-hmm. and they want to demoralize Philadelphia as quickly as possible.
Just go at them.
Yeah, you want to go for the throat as quick as you can. So I think they go in, they try and get a goal as quick as possible. I think Gutierrez is the one that gets the goal this time.
Ooh.
I think they crowd the box. I think, they kind of search around, look for someone with an open lane. Gutierrez sneaks in there like he was doing early on last year, and he gets his goal.
I'm going Ilya. I
think.
I think just Ilya. with the midfield the way it is, and them playing controlling the ball and the flow of the game, I think it's going to come from the midfield.
He's probably going to have some space.
Yeah, he's going to have some space.
He had a banger. Who was that against?
That was Toluca. Second game in Toluca.
Obviously, he's had multiple PKs and finished mm-hmm. those, but that goal was pretty.
Yeah. What's the final score?
Ooh, I'm going to go 3-0.
3-0. Right.
Yeah, because I think once they get one, it's going to be like a scoring flurry.
Vegas has the over-under at 3 goals.
Did you just make that up?
No, I literally got it on my BR app.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going 3-0.
I am going to go 2-0.
Okay.
I'm right there with you. I'm going 2-0.
It's funny because usually you go 2-1, Julio. That's your thing, is to go 2-1. So I'm actually surprised. I think it's going to be 2-0. I think they get a goal early, and then I think that's when they go to the possession. And then once they go to the possession, then they try and work their way back down the field. Second half, we get one early in the second half, and then mm-hmm. from there, it's game over.
I see this is going to be a game where they compete with each other, who can score and who can do it faster and better and flashier. So
I think early on they're going to do that. Yeah, yeah. I can imagine, like, Rockets will be trying to go there and score.
And then Namath, I think, will want to do some things. And then I think we'll see Shallowy, and I think that he'll want to join in on that.
I think Jurso is going to try to get a PK. He's going to try to jump into the nearest player he can.
Jump into it.
That's what he does. He doesn't do it as much as Latif Blessing did. Latif Blessing looked for someone to jump into.
Anyway, big match. Tune in. Catch the game. If you are there listening to us, thank you.
Anybody
who did listen, we appreciate you. First ever special. If you want to call Speck and let him know that you want to hear us
every weekend. No, email Speck. Don't call Speck.
Okay, you can text us if you want. 69306 and let us know you want to hear from us every weekend. That'd be great. This is the Jillian Carroll Uno Cero crew signing out and wishing Sporting the best of luck.
Mercedes-Benz is an official.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.